Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is episode 241, and it is 13 March, Wednesday. I think Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday. And again, we're going to do a short episode, only, I don't know, five stories, maybe six. We'll start off with CENTCOM X, 12 March, 2024, U.S. Army vessels, Spec 4, James A. Liu, LSV 6, U.S. Army vessel Monterey, LCU 30, U.S. Army vessel Matamoros, LCU 26, and U.S. Army vessel Wilson Wharf, LCU 11. From the 7th Transportation Brigade Expeditionary, 3rd Expeditionary Sustainment Command, 18th Airborne Corps, departed Joint Base Langley-Eustis en route to Eastern Mediterranean to establish roll-on, roll-off dock capability that allows ship-to-shore humanitarian assistance to Gaza. The Specialist 4, James A. Liu, the Monterey, the Matamoros, and the Wilson Wharf are carrying equipment and supplies needed to establish the temporary pier to deliver vital humanitarian supplies. It's a story that we're going to continue to follow. All this is predicated or initiated on the President's State of the Union address last week that got this unit from basically Fort Eustis, Virginia, from 7th Transportation Brigade moving, and they are en route. Next story, 12 March, Red Sea update. Between 02 and 4:30 a.m. local time on 12 March, Iran-backed Houthi terrorists fired one close-range ballistic missile from Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen toward the USS Laboon in the Red Sea. The missile did not impact the vessel, and there were no injuries or damage reported. United States Central Command and a coalition vessel successfully engaged and destroyed two unmanned aerial systems launched from a Houthi-controlled area of Yemen. It was determined that these weapons presented an imminent threat to merchant vessels and U.S. Navy ships. And that's it for CENTCOM X for 12 March. Now we're caught up. IDF story here from Times of Israel, Emmanuel Fabian. He's the beat reporter that we've kind of been following. 12 March, IDF says 4,500 has bullet targets hit, 300 operatives killed since the start of the war. We'll just stick to the war in the north right now. So Israel has hit more than 4,500 has bullet targets since the start of the ongoing war in Gaza Strip, the IDF said on Tuesday, after some 100 rockets were fired from Lebanon by the Iran-backed terror group earlier in the day. According to IDF estimates, more than 300 Hezbollah operatives have been killed, including five senior commanders, and 750 have been wounded by Israeli strikes across 5 months of daily skirmishes on the border. Over the past months, Northern Command, IDF Northern Command, has led strikes from the air against more than 1,200 targets and another 3,100 sites were targeted from the ground using artillery and tanks. The IDF noted that some of the 4,500 Hezbollah targets, some of them, were struck in Syria, including on Tuesday. According to the IDF, the targets have included, talking about all these 4,500, they've included weapons depots, buildings used by Hezbollah for attacks, observation posts, more than 150 along the border, 70 command centers, and more than 50 rocket-launching positions, and dozens of squads carrying out anti-tank missile attacks. Of the targeted sites, more than 450 of them were said to have belonged to Hezbollah's elite Radwan force, which is believed by Israel to be tasked with potentially infiltrating the country. For their part, Hezbollah's named more than 240 members who have been killed by the IDF since 8 October. Another 40 operatives from other groups have been killed in strikes in southern Lebanon, as well as a Lebanese soldier and at least 30 civilians, three of whom are journalists. The near-daily exchange of fire along the shared Israel-Lebanon border has caused seven civilian deaths on the Israeli side, as well as the deaths of 10 IDF soldiers and reservists. Almost done here. Since 8 October, Hezbollah-led forces have attacked Israeli communities and military posts along the border on a near-daily basis, with the group saying it is doing so in support of Gaza amid the war with the Hamas terror group. Obviously, Israel's war with the Hamas terror group. The Iran-backed terror group took responsibility for firing more than 100 rockets at northern Israel on Tuesday in two separate barrages, claiming it had targeted two army Israeli bases in the Golan Heights with Katyusha rockets. Hezbollah said the rocket fire was in response to recent Israeli attacks in Lebanon, including a strike Monday night in Baalbek in the country's northeast. Baalbek is an area identified in the past as a Hezbollah stronghold, is nearly 100 km from the Israeli border. After those barrages, the IDF said fighter jets struck three rocket launchers in southern Lebanon used in the attack. And that's where I'll stop there. So that's the latest what's going on in the conflict over there from the north, in the north, I should say. Here's something from Ukraine. The Biden administration announces urgent security assistance for Ukraine. How much is it? $300 million. Where they got the money? Who knows? Maybe it'll tell us. 12 March today, Department of Defense announced additional security assistance as an extraordinary measure to address some of Ukraine's most pressing security and defense needs. This is the Biden administration's 55th tranche of equipment to be provided from DOD inventory since August of 21. The presidential drawdown authority is valued at $300 million and includes capability to support Ukraine's immediate air defense, artillery, and anti-tank requirements. Here's what's in it. Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, additional ammunition for HIMARS, 155mm artillery rounds, including HEDP, high explosive dual purpose approved cluster munitions, 105 artillery rounds, 105mm, not 105, AT-4 anti-armor systems, additional rounds of small arms ammunition, demolition munitions for obstacle clearing and spare parts, maintenance, and other ancillary equipment. Stuff we've all seen before. Next, additional ammunition for high mobility artillery rocket system HIMARS. So yeah, the last package, this package, the how much is it? $300 million package has got HIMARS stuff in it, which leads me to a HIMARS story. This is a good one. Defense Post, Joe Sabala, 12 March, Lockheed Martin's Gimlers missile doubles range in latest trial. So the HIMARS basic round, the Gimlers, which means guided multiple launch rocket system missile, they just extended the range, Lockheed Martin. Very interesting story. Lockheed Martin has demonstrated the improved capability of the Gimlers round, which means guided multiple launch rocket system missile, doubling its range in a recent trial, doubling it. The company says two extended range Gimler munitions were fired from HIMARS into a target at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico. They reportedly achieved desired flight trajectory, speed, range, and accuracy, though no exact figures were provided. The listed operational range for the Gimlers is 70 kilometers, while the extended range variant can hit targets up to 150 kilometers away. Lockheed Martin said the successful test brings a powerful munition a step closer to full-rate production and fielding. The ER Gimlers is an all-weather surface-to-surface weapon providing precision strike to military units. It can be fired from the MLRS M270 and, of course, the HIMARS. Unlike other Gimlers variants, the extended range version incorporates a large motor and boasts enhanced maneuverability thanks to a tail-driven control. That's it. Nice, short, and sweet story there. Only two more stories and we're done. Both Air Force, well, one's an F-35 story, not necessarily Air Force, and the second was an Air Force budget story, both from Breaking Defense. Here's the first one. Pentagon finally approves F-35 for full-rate production after a five-year delay, Valerie and Senna on 12 March. I don't know if this is a story you should celebrate, just a sad state of affairs. I mean, I think we'll get to it in the article. How many of these things have been fielded? Over 990 have been delivered and fielded, and we're just now getting Milestone C, which is an acquisition term for becoming a program of record. I mean, I don't know. Here we go. The Pentagon finally approved the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter for full-rate production 5 years after originally anticipated. Department of Defense Acquisition Chief Bill LaPlante, Dr. Bill LaPlante, signed off on the so-called Milestone C, That's an acquisition term meaning program of record. Earlier today, a crucial moment signifying the department's confidence in performance of the aircraft and maturity of Lockheed Martin's production system, though the plane has already been serviced with the United States and friendly foreign nations for years. And here's Dr. LaPlante. This is a major achievement for the F-35 program. This decision, backed by my colleagues in the department, highlights to the services, the F-35 cooperative program partners, and foreign military sales customers that the F-35 is stable, agile, and that all statutory and regulatory requirements have been appropriately addressed. Now, I'll agree with some of that statement. I will agree that all statutory and regulatory requirements have been appropriately addressed, and I might even agree with the stable part, but the freaking agile part, how can you say that with a straight face or write that with a straight face? Oh, yeah, it's a very agile process 5 years after. Moving on, the Milestone C decision follows 7 March meeting with Defense Acquisition Board, which considers the finding of the F-35 combined initial operational test and evaluation and live fire test and evaluation report prepared by the Pentagon's independent West Weapons Tester. While over 990 F-35s have already been delivered, the program has technically been stuck in initial operating testing phase and low-rate initial production for years due to delays in standing up the Joint Simulation Environment, a digital environment which emulates advanced threats which cannot be replicated in live flight tests. Testing in the Joint Simulated Environment was a prerequisite for the F-35 to complete IOT&E. So whoever the office that was responsible for the Joint Simulation Environment dug their heels in for 5 years and said, until you get this right, we're not signing off on Milestone C. And finally, 5 years later, I guess they achieved it. Now, I don't know who to point a finger at on this. I mean, Dr. LaPlante's right. You got all these laws and regulations you have to follow. Anyway, I wouldn't be celebrating this. I wouldn't be bragging about this. I definitely wouldn't call it agile. Moving on. Compared to the original plan outlined in 2012, the program formally entered the operational testing phase over a year late in 2018, which doesn't make sense because compared to the original plan outlined in 2012, the program formally entered the operational testing phase a year late in 2018. I guess it was the 2012 plan said you're going to enter in 2017 and they ended 2018. Okay, got it. And testing in the joint simulation environment hit continual delays due to technical issues and pandemic challenges. We're still bringing that up. A key moment came in September 2023 when F-35 completed 64 combat trials in the JSE known as Runs for Score. The years of delay did little to impact F-35 sales and production as the F-35 has been producing up to 100 F-35s a year since 2019. This was the year the F-35 initially planned to reach full rate production. The U.S. makes the F-35 with 7 international partners and has agreement to sell the planes to another 9. Israeli F-35s have already seen combat in the current Gaza crisis. So I wonder if they just... Nah, I'll stop there. While we're talking about the Air Force, are we talking about the Air Force? I guess we are. Air Force wants to retire 250 aircraft as part of the 188 FY25 budget request. So this is the budget story. Breaking Defense. I think I did the last one from the Army from Breaking Defense also. Ashley Roquet. So this is the Air Force, and I guess I'll get to the Navy and Marines in another episode. This is the last story. What's the date on this? It's Michael Marrow, 11 March. The opening quote is, "We're very, very fixated on being competitive with the pacing challenge of China," says Air Force Secretary Frank Kendall. "I think the budget that we submitted moves us forward, not quite as fast as we would like to, but it moves us forward in the right direction while maintaining our current capabilities that are essential to the nation." Here's the story. So the U.S. Air Force will request a total of $188.1 billion in the FY25 budget, part of a submission that asked lawmakers to greenlight the retirement of 250 aircraft. We'll get to that. In a Friday briefing, last Friday, with reporters ahead of the budget release, Kristen Jones, who is performing the duties of Air Force Undersecretary, said the services budget would grow 1.6% compared to the FY24 budget, or an increase of $3 billion. Do I want to get into this? Here's something I didn't know. For the Department of the Air Force, which includes the Space Force, the Air Force's top line will grow from $215.1 billion in FY24 to 217.5 billion in FY25, increase of 1.1. So the Air Force is 188, and whatever's left between 188 and 217, that's Space Force, I guess. Under spending limits imposed by Congress through the Fiscal Responsibility Act, also known as FRA, total defense spending was capped at $886 billion in FY24 and $895 billion in FY25. These numbers force tough trade-offs, Air Force officials said, curtailing some modernization plans like efforts to replenish aging fighters. So we're going to do a comparison. For the Army side, Doug Bush said he always wants to spend more money on procurement than research and development. You'll see that the Air Force spends more money on research and development than they do on procurement for whatever reason. Here we go. We'll start with procurement. The Air Force procurement account is one of the most noticeable areas to take a hit under the FRA caps, dropping from $30.6 billion in 24 to $29 billion in 25. So they're only asking for $29 billion in 25. These funds will buy a total of 90 aircraft, as well as munitions and other equipment. We're going to talk about the 90 aircraft right now. So of the 90 aircraft, 60 of them are for fighter jets, 42 F-35As, and 18 F-15EXs. The Air Force wants to buy 15 Boeing KC-46 Alpha tankers for $3.1 billion. They want to buy 8 Boeing MH-139s, which are helicopters, I think, that patrol the ICBM silos. And they want to buy 7 Boeing T-7 trainers. They also want to spend $353 million to continue low-rate initial production of the B-21 Raider stealth bomber. And, of course, they want to spend some... Anyway, I'll stop right there. So those are your aircraft they want to buy. Now we'll get to some of the missiles they want to buy. Procure. Multi-year procurements will continue for key munitions, $825 million for 550 joint air-to-surface standoff missiles, $166 million for 115 long-range anti-ship missiles. They also want to buy 128 advanced anti-radiation guided missiles, extended range. And they want to buy... how many? 462 advanced medium range air-to-air missiles. So those are the missiles. And here's something for hypersonic. It's not good news. After some seemingly mixed signals from officials, the fate of what could have been the Air Force's first hypersonic weapon is now more clear, although a key test still remains, whose results officials say will inform future investment decisions. No funds are being put toward buying air-launched rapid response weapons in FY25. So there's no procurement for the first hypersonic missile weapon from the Air Force. Now, the Army, they're still moving out with theirs, which is good news. So the Air Force needs to get on the ball, right? Moving on. Here's what they're going to retire. Similar to last year, the Air Force is seeking a raft of divestments to free up funds for maintaining aircraft officials argue are no longer capable of performing in a peer fight. That money can be better spent on paving the way for newer replacements. Epitomizing that view of divestment is the A-10 Warthog, which lawmakers protected for years before relenting in 2023. After gaining approval for 42 retirements last year, the service now wants to retire 56 more, and they want to clear out the inventory of A-10s by the end of the decade, which 6 years away. Another divestment priority is the older F-22 Raptors, known as the Block 20. They're trying to divest 32 of these in FY25. Divestment of those jets will free up funds for the next generation air dominance fighter and modernizing other F-22s to bridge the way to the next-generation air dominance fighter. Here's a total list of 250 retirements in FY25 requested. 32 F-22s, 26 F-15Es, 11 F-16 C&Ds, 65 F-16 C&Ds. I'm sorry, 11 F-16 C&Ds, 65 F-15 C&Ds, 56 A-10s, 22 T-1 Alphas, 12 HH-60Gs, 6C-130Hs, one EC-130H, two CV-22s, one E-11, and 16 KC-135s. For R&D, research and development, in total, the Air Force wants to request is requesting $37.7 billion. And what did they spend on procurement? I'm going back up. Stand by. $29 billion. So they spent more. They're spending more on R&D than they are on procurement. To field a new generation of air power, this is the NGAD. The Air Force wants to spend big on a family of systems for the NGAD, asking for $3.4 billion. This includes $2.8 billion for the platform and $680 million for the Collaborative Combat Aircraft Drone Wingman, $560 million for the drones themselves, and $120 million for other stuff like autonomy development. An award for the NGAD is assumed to be either Boeing or Lockheed Martin is expected this calendar year. We have to keep an eye on that. According to an Air Force spokesman, the CCA money, which, a reminder, is collaborative combat aircraft, kind of like a unmanned wingman to this NGAD, will be geared toward building production representative drones and proceeding with a test campaign. As Breaking Defense first reported, there are five companies competing for this: Anduril, Boeing, General Atomics, Lockheed Martin, and Northrop Grumman. These companies were selected by the Air Force in an early stage of the program, and at some point, they are going to eliminate two or three of these, down select from one, two, three, four, five to either two or three. Let's talk about the hypersonic cruise missile. Research on other key initiatives continue, like the hypersonic attack cruise missile. The service will request $517 million for this, as well as $623 million for a new nuclear-armed cruise missile known as a long-range standoff weapon. Almost done. An effort to field a replacement for the E-4B Nightwatch Doomsday plane will also see a jump in funding to $1.7 billion. Boeing was eliminated from contention in the program. All eyes are on Sierra Nevada as the only publicly known contender that remains. So they're competing against themselves. And finally, we'll get to this quote-unquote Air Force version of the Joint All-Domain Command and Control Initiative. Separately, the Department of the Air Force will continue building its, in quotations, battle network concept, the department's contribution to the Pentagon's larger combined Joint All-Domain Command and Control Initiative. The Air Force is requesting $750 million within the Advanced Battle Management System funding line, which has four key initiatives: architecture and systems, engineering, digital infrastructure, software and applications, and aerial networking. And the idea is to test out a node, a network node between a KC-46 Alpha and a prototype on an F-15EX. And that's it. What am I doing on time? 23 minutes. Not bad. So there you go. Five or six stories in 23 minutes. Kind of short to the point. This is episode... I forgot already. Episode 241 of the books. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.